Good morning, everyone. Very excited to be here today. Again, my name is Kenny, and that's a logo for the study that we conducted. No disclosures or no relationships to this club. And again, the title of our research is Knowledge, Attitudes, and Practice Towards Epilepsy, or KATE for short. And it was a survey of Chinese and Vietnamese adults in the United States. I'm from the School of Public Health at UC Berkeley. I'd like to begin the session by explaining what epilepsy is. Epilepsy is a generic term that covers a variety of seizure disorders. And a seizure is a brief disturbance in the electrical activity in the brain. How a neurologist explained to me was the electrical activity in the brain is really chaotic in general. However, when you have a seizure, what happens is that it becomes very ordered. And ironically, this order of the brain activity actually brings about malfunctioning of the brain and causes a seizure. In nearly 70% of the cases, the cause is unknown. However, some common causes for epilepsy include head trauma, infections, and brain tumors. The information is from Epilepsy Foundation, and so is the following information. People at risk, prevalence, there are about 3 million Americans with epilepsy. Incidence rate is about 181,000 new cases of seizure and epilepsy each year. And average population is everyone, because it can affect anyone of any age and gender. Though I'd like to point out that ethnic minorities tend to have a higher rate and Asian Americans. Alright. So objectives. We had primary and secondary objectives. Primary was to fill a really glaring gap in the literature. In order to do that, we conducted a cross-sectional study to better understand the case among the Chinese and Vietnamese population. And when I say gap, I mean that this type of study has been conducted in the US since 1979, about 30 years now, but none have ever focused on Asian American population, so we are the first study to do that. We also did some advocacy work on the side by offering brochures to educate the public and to help overcome some stigmatization. Secondary objectives include allowing a student-led team of research apprentices to design and guide a multi-regional survey project, to take the great educational opportunities, and also to reach out to the immigrant communities through our multilingual skills. I separated the methods into three different sections, and I just begin with the first section, which is preparation. As many of you may know, background research is very integral to having a good, solid project. And the tools we use were PubMed and the US Census data, and I'll get more into the US Census data use a little bit later on. We also created a survey instrument. It was a 34-item survey, and this survey was available in different languages, including English, Chinese, and Vietnamese. And in order for the surveys to be useful, we did a forward and backwards translation process to, one, make sure that the translation was done correctly, and two, to make sure that it was understandable in the language it was translated into. And lastly, we received our IRB approval, which was from UC Berkeley's Committee for Protection of Human Subjects. Next, we went into the field and did our field work. First, we did a local reconnaissance, which is where we applied our US Census data and figured out the highest densities for Chinese and Vietnamese Americans in the US. Next, we kind of did through that and narrowed it down by contacting local organizations within those areas for advice in terms of which locales they felt were the best way for us to spend our time. And also, in some cases, to actually ask for permission to survey since they were good locales for surveying. And lastly, we went into the field and conducted our survey. The survey was a paper survey available in English, Chinese, and Vietnamese. And we had translators available for Mandarin, Cantonese, and Vietnamese translations. Lastly, we did analysis of our data. We began by entering our data using Excel 2003. And I'd like to mention that was quite an ordeal because we had a huge stack of surveys to enter. And then we did our data analysis, also using Excel to obtain the frequencies and to perform our chi-square analyses. And lastly, as I'm doing now, I'm presenting, and we are also in the process of publishing our results in the journal Epilepsy and Behavior. I'd like to introduce our study population at this time. We had 2,831 Chinese and Vietnamese American adults from 7 states and 37 cities across the United States. In terms of gender, we had 53% female and 47% male. Ethnicity-wise, 58% were Chinese or of Chinese descent, 40% were Vietnamese or of Vietnamese descent, and approximately 2% were of both Chinese and Vietnamese descent. terms of age, we kind of had a slight skew towards the 18 to 24 age category, but otherwise everything else kind of just panned out evenly. Approximately 70% of those surveyed had been in the U.S. for 20 years or fewer. I believe our meeting was right about the 20-year range. And also, in terms of primary languages spoken at home, we have a majority of subjects speaking either Mandarin or Vietnamese, and 13% speaking Cantonese, and a minority of 5% speaking English. Educational status, we had a pretty good bell curve distribution for this. Majority had either completed high school or had some college, and very few either only completed up to elementary school, and about 10% had a graduate degree. Results also separate into three different sections. It is knowledge, attitudes, and then practice. I'd like to go into knowledge first. In terms of knowledge, there are five things I'd like to point out, and that is that 84% have either heard or read of epilepsy, which really points to the fact that people are, to some degree, familiar with the condition. Now, 34% know someone with epilepsy, and that's a greater degree of familiarity. And 58% had either witnessed a seizure in person or live or on TV. And unfortunately, 3/4 incorrectly believe that inserting a hard object into a person's mouth during a seizure is the appropriate course of action, which is directly against recommendations of the Epilepsy Foundation due to the high risk involved of permanently damaging the victim's teeth. And 32% believe that epilepsy is a mental illness, even though it's usually categorized as a mental condition. In terms of attitudes, I'd like to go on first with belief that people with epilepsy could or should do the following. About 3/4 believe that they could get married. About 62% believe they could have kids. And 74% again believe they can work or function like people without epilepsy. In terms of negative attitudes, you have about more than a fifth of the study participants believing that people with epilepsy pose a danger to others. And also 21% feel inclined to conceal family members' epilepsy, which really goes to underscore the correlation with social stigma to this condition. And lastly, I'd like to talk about the practice towards epilepsy among Asian Americans. We have 20% of respondents objecting to having their children play with other children with epilepsy. We have 42% objecting to their children marrying someone with epilepsy. And 43% of those interviews said that as employers, they would not knowingly hire someone with epilepsy, which is very unfortunate, especially considering the type of discrimination they already have to go through. And there were many more different categories, but in the interest of time, these three, and I'd like to go on to the conclusions. And that is that misconceptions about epilepsy do indeed exist in the Asian American population, that a considerable proportion of participants held negative or discriminatory views towards people with epilepsy. However, in general, Asian Americans tend to hold less negative or discriminatory views when compared to previous similar studies done in other Asian countries. Let's talk about the limitations. We use a convenient sampling method, which is subject to biases inherent in the method. For example, results may be biased towards individuals who are willing to stop and converse long enough to complete a short survey. And I'd like to go on to the strengths of this. Again, it addresses a major gap in the literature about epilepsy attitudes and knowledge among Asian Americans living in the US. It was a multi-region sample, and a robust sample size was obtained. Of course, we had 4 languages, so really just broaden the sample size we can obtain. And also, we surveyed at a large variety of locations. And just to kind of bring this to life, I included some pictures to show everyone. We were at a Vietnamese Buddhist temple in San Francisco, California. We were at a supermarket in San Jose, California. We waited in a really long line in the campus parking office at UCSD. We went into the kitchen of a Chinese restaurant in Seattle, Washington to go and interview the chefs and the staff working inside the kitchens. We were at a basketball tournament at Rice University in Houston, Texas. We were at a cafeteria at Columbia University in New York. We were on the streets of Chinatown in Queens, New York, and this is far from being a very inclusive representation of different places we've been to. I've never been to so many nail salons in my life, but yep, just kind of skimming the surface. In terms of future direction, we hope that future education programs and interventions may bring greater knowledge and acceptance of epilepsy to the Asian American community. We'd like to acknowledge these following organizations: Health Research for Action, Center for Race and Gender, Associate Students of the University of California, Grant, Undergraduate Research and Apprenticeship Program. The first four are from the University of California, Berkeley. And lastly, we'd like to acknowledge the Epilepsy Foundation. And this is the research team. I'm the lead investigator. My co-investigators are Wenting Guo, Kevin Chung, Catherine Nguyen, who recently received her bachelor's degree, Karina Chung, and Christine Nguyen. Our faculty mentors are Dr. Susan Ivey and Winston Tseng. And here's a picture of my research team. And I'd like to thank my research team for coming out to support me today, and also my parents for coming out. Thank you.
Great. I'd like for all the presenters to come to the front for our question and answer session. First of all, I would like to commend all the presenters. I'm really fascinated by the array of topics that were here, ranging from schizophrenia, major depressive disorder, epilepsy, smoking, discrimination, and general status. So, it really gave a really full body about, the different factors that are involved in mental health as well as physical health. So, come on up. Anybody have questions to start with? Have a seat, people.
For me, I also use the NIS data set, but we had to go through the process of choosing which variables are most acceptable. So first, we follow the conceptualization. What is the feasibility? Another thing is the percentage, the prevalence of the rate. So we had 7% prevalence. That was our standard of choosing the variables. The reason for that is because of the power analysis. For the power analysis, you need to have enough samples, but you also need to have enough occurrences, observations, points. That's why we chose 7%. So all the outcomes, mental health, and the physical health is above 7%. However, there's one exception, is the intermittent explosive disorder. We only had observation for 4%. But the reason why we chose that was that because there are none of the studies really that I have looked at focused on intermittent explosive disorder, and in general, as well as among Asian Americans as well. The intermittent explosive disorder is a pretty rare form. However, in the US, 4% of the population are suffering from that. And we have very little understanding of that. And the definition of the intermittent explosive disorder is that you have uncontrollable outrages, okay? But it's not better accounted by depression or any kind of mental disorder or the substance uses. So that was our criteria.
I'll have him answer. I didn't use any mental health outcomes, so.
I didn't.
Well, with your work, I guess, how did you choose epilepsy as the issue to look at?
It was a more personal basis. It was my uncle passed away from complications with epilepsy, and so we decided to pursue that.
One of the things that I found interesting was that, I mean, the reason why we are doing these kind of studies ultimately to either prevent smoking or educate people to quit smoking. So I was looking at, I was mainly interested in what kind of programs we can develop in order to have effective smoking cessation programs in each community. And due to the limitation of the time today, I was not able to go in much detail, but I found out that it's very interesting that each groups have very different recommendations for smoking cessation programs, and I really think that we need to work with each groups, like CBOs, leaders from CBO, FBOs, and community participants to really design the program that works well with their culture and also their background. So that was the main thing that that I would probably, if I were to design the smoking cessation program in the future, that's something to keep in mind, that we really have to tailor to the groups and their interests.
Is there anything common, though, that linked
Yes, I mean, one of the things that I presented today was the social smoking was like really huge factor in all the groups, that the smoking is influenced a lot by their co-workers, families, and friends. So if we were to develop smoking cessation, I think probably one of the good things to stress is not just individual, but maybe like more social network-based cessation programs may also work, like worksite-based smoking cessation programs, or the smoking cessation programs that can work within like family or friend setting. I think that could be a good recommendation for the future. Yeah. I think this was actually one thing that I have to stress is this is based on the qualitative study, which means smaller sample size. So I cannot generalize this finding to the all Asian American communities. So that's one thing that I want to start with. And within our sample, there were some people, like you said, who were social smokers in their own country and came here. They were more like lonely smokers. However, most of the people were keep smoking, but there were still a lot of people who were smoking together. Like mostly at the work site, a lot of the people were working at the small businesses, and they said most of the people at their work site smoke. So during the break, you know, everyone come out together and smoke, and if I don't smoke and everyone else smoke, it's awkward, so I have to smoke. So I think that's kind of the cultural environment that are going on in these communities a lot. So that's why I think it's important to stress smoking in a social settings and maybe to develop a program that may address some of these features.
Good work, dear.